Good morning. Open the Senate Revenue Committee. Should be a relatively short day, and then we have a meeting tomorrow, and then we're done for the week. So we'll do one final hearing work session on Senate Bill 412 and not hear the word Senate Bill 412 again for 2 years. Open a work session on Senate Bill 412, the Urban Renewal Bill. We've heard a great deal about it. We have the dash fives before us, which take out the opt-out provision. And then we have the dash sixes. And Michelle, would you like to come and bring whoever you would like with you, if you'd like, to talk about the dash sixes? And then I'd like to move this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. The dash sixes remove the language that was inserted in 412 that relates to duration. We have heard from agency managers, some private sector folks, and a couple of attorneys that putting an end date, a specific end date on an urban renewal plan can be difficult. Your plan is based on a series of assumptions, and some assumptions are beyond your control. Things can occur, such as slumps in the economy. Other leveraged funds, such as federal grants, can be delayed due to circumstances beyond your control. There are private sector business dynamics that might influence the end date, such as changes in ownership, mergers, et cetera. As well as the fact that ultimately the Urban Renewal Agency cannot control when a private sector business chooses to make their investment. We currently have a limit on how big an agency can get, and that is maximum indebtedness, and that continues to stay in the bill. The maximum amount of debt that an agency can issue is maximum indebtedness. It's tied to the urban renewal plan and the projects that the agency will undertake to bring an area up to its full potential. Maximum indebtedness does allow agencies to have the flexibility that they need to pay off the bonds in a way that makes sense, and it even gives them enough flexibility to do it sooner than predicted if economic conditions are right and investment is taking off at a pace that was greater than expected as opposed to slower. So we brought the dash sixes in because that would help alleviate some concerns that could occur. That would help alleviate concerns that if the duration language remains in the bill, it's possible that we could end up with some partially completed projects that businesses need and no way to finish them. We feel that would be bad for the community, it would be bad for business, and they may not want to invest with that level of uncertainty. And I think it might also be bad for districts, because if you have partially completed projects, there's no incentive for business to locate there. The value that folks are expecting to be returned to the rolls won't come to fruition. So that's the reason for the amendment. We appreciate your consideration of that.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Metzger?
Could you explain to me, I'm looking at your dash six, and it says on the amendment, line 12 of the amendment, it says on page 6, delete lines 1 through 27 and insert, and you have some language there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is current statute. Could you tell me why we would delete notice requirements and other issues that are in the statute? Why would we delete lines 1 through, especially lines 1 through 24? Why would that be deleted?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I believe that is, if you'll give me a second, I'll go ahead and grab the actual text of 412A, but I don't believe that it makes any changes to current statute, that deletion just has to do with maybe a reference point in the bill. I need to check on that and get back to you.
Yeah.
I think the A engrossed and went through it.
I'm looking at A engrossed Senate Bill 412, and these are amendments to the A engrossed bill.
Uh-huh. Mary, do you want to?
Yes, I went through it too, and it didn't seem like they were doing anything but deleting references to the duration of the plan on page 2, line 2.
Well, I understand that, Mary.
Okay.
Can we jump ahead to the line on page 6, delete lines 1 through 27? That's what I'm asking about.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And also deleting the page before lines 36 to 45.
Yeah. Right, exactly. It starts the day before. It starts the page before. But why is that whole section deleted? You know, I talked about notice requirements. Governing body will hold public hearings. I want to know why that would be eliminated.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I believe that what you're deleting are the notice requirements. I think would remain in the bill as current law is there. I think on page 6, lines 1 through 27, you're looking at...
I mean, it may be duplicative, but
yeah.
I want to know where that is.
I believe that that's the reason for it, is obviously Section 5 is bolded.
But if you're deleting, you're deleting. I mean... Who's our legislative council? Oh, here's
DJ. That's who's writing everything. The work
kind of one man legislative council.
Well, I'm sure Dexter can explain it to us. So.
Yeah. Dexter, how'd you do that? You just looked up and you're there.
Should be two places at once.
Super LC.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. Basically, that section is not deleted from law. It is only deleted from the bill because there's no change in current law. So that's the reason.
So all that remains on the
All that remains as current law. It's just the only change that was in the bill originally was the reference to the duration requirements. And since we're taking the duration requirements out, there's no reason to change that provision of existing law. So it remains as law.
Okay, so nothing will be impacted by that. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Pazansky.
Thank you.
Michelle, could you explain? I mean, this is on the dash 6 is new. I'm wondering when the work group was meeting, why it wasn't brought up, what their concerns were apparent at that time, why they weren't brought up.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pazansky, it's my recollection and in staff notes dated March 31st that this was discussed in the work group, but there wasn't consensus around this issue. The work group, and I'm reading from staff notes, recognized that specifying the exact duration of indebtedness would be difficult because it depends on anticipated revenues from division of tax. It cannot be forecast with certainty.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Michelle, can you walk us through a scenario where this duration would be a problem if we had the bill, we passed it as is, how this would play itself out and be problematic for...
Senator Deckert, members of the committee, one scenario might be, for example, we're having a situation now where T21 federal transportation funding has been stuck in Congress now for quite a while. That's delaying some funds that some Ann Arbor Renewal Agency, I believe it's South Waterfront, I would have to check with the PDC to make sure, is expecting to help them complete their urban renewal project plans in total. Putting a hard end date on this might cause them to run up against that date, the funds having not been received and no way to complete this project plan.
Okay. Are there any consultants for PDC here?
It's a joke.
Joke on current news. Okay. Any other questions for Mark? Do you want Marge? Do you want to? You're not a consultant of PDC.
$200 there.
In my dream. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marge Kafori, representing the City of Portland and also PDC. Ms. Deister is correct. The example that she gave you is happening right now in South Waterfront. We have had money in the last three T21 bills that were supposed to come to South Waterfront. We still don't know whether that's going to happen this session. A lot of that goes into pedestrian and bike and access improvements. A lot of it will go into access to I-5 from North McAdam, which is a severely challenged issue right now. Our job is to make the public improvements in that area, and the private investment is supposed to follow. We're delayed, so the whole project and the whole neighborhood have been set back some.
So, and if we stick a date specific in the, in this bill, that would create problems for, I would guess would be, it would be the private folks stepping forward and making their investment. But
Mr. Chair and members, we sell bonds based on what we think the investment is going to be. Mm-hmm. And then we have to have a revenue stream that takes care of the bonded debt. If we don't get the investment in a timely manner, then we'll have to scale back on what we do.
Great. Great. Questions, Senator Shah?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have listened to this testimony here and previously discussed this issue, and it's my belief that we do need the Dash 6 amendments to make these projects more workable, which is good for communities everywhere. So I would prefer moving those today and not leaving it for the House to rework the bill once it's over there. I think we need to do the due diligence here and pass out a bill that's most workable.
Thank you. Senator Prezansky.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll agree with that. I think that I'm comfortable enough to allow the A6s to be included with, like, the A5s moving it forward. But I think the one thing I do want to have the House look at, and maybe, Mary, if you're going to be tracking the bill over there, is should we not have some type of review as to how long it extends out? I didn't hear in the testimony as to what is going to be the determinant, who's going to actually determine how much longer it's extended out. I mean, if we're hearing from Portland that these T21 dollars continue to be extended out and extended out, it just seems to me we need to have some ability to look at it and maybe have some determination as to whether it shouldn't be closed out because maybe the funds aren't going to be there. And what I've heard through the testimony and previous hearings is the uncertainty of how long the duration of these projects could go on. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't take in for the unknowns, but at the same time, we do need to have some certainty at some point. But I don't think that's something for us to do today, and we should hopefully maybe the individuals who may not be here today that may have some reservations about the A6 will be able to work with the cities and come up with some type of terminology that would give some type of look back oversight to some level.
Yeah, it's hard to craft the right. Yeah. I know that your work group worked on how do you craft this. I mean, we heard examples of, I think it was around Clackamas Town Center, where it seemed like the duration of the project just went and went and went and continues to go. And how do you craft a solution? Because I'm fine with the A6, as I can see the rationale of not putting specificity into it where you would provide a disincentive to issuing the bonds. Senator George, any?
Yes, I can.
Please.
Question for you, too. The decision is made by a community to move forward with an urban renewal, and then we find because of fluctuation of the economy that adjustments need to be made. Who will make a determination if, you know what, the project's in trouble, we just need to end it and take what we have here, or we do need to extend? Because to me, I can't see us micromanaging that decision from here. That would be something the community would need to make the decision on. Can you two help me with that? Who, as I believe Senator Prezansky was asking, who has the control over that decision as to when to stop and start?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that decision is made by the Urban Renewal Agency. They're going to be taking a look at their plan. They're going to be taking a look at their obligations outstanding to their debt holders and determining how best to make that decision, what they might need to do to make sure that they maintain those obligations mm-hmm. to their bondholders. And if adjustments to the plan need to be made, like scaling back projects, et cetera, I believe that would be a substantial amendment to the plan. That would be hearing a notice, et cetera.
Sure.
Yeah. That's, I guess, really what I'm getting at is at some point, and I was thinking maybe if you pick the date, 2 years, 4 years, whatever, past an extension of when it's originally set for, that there would be some type of review. And if it is a substantial and we're going to have the notice and public hearing, then that would allow the community and those who are impacted to have the opportunity to have that discussion.
Right.
That gives a little comfort.
Right. Any other thoughts or? Thank you very much. Special districts, do y'all need to say anything on the dash sixes? We've definitely heard about the dash fives. I'm not seeing anyone getting up. Okay, so one work session, we're looking at the fives and the sixes.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 412.
Senator Starr has moved the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 412. Any discussion? Any objection? Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash six amendments to Senate Bill 412.
Senator Starr has moved the dash six amendments to Senate Bill 412. Any discussion? Any objection? So
ordered. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 412 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 412 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Y'all want to carry that one together?
We could try again.
Okay. So we'll do Starr and Przanski, the team that has worked very hard, and thank you. And I realize folks didn't get everything they wanted out of this bill, but I know you worked very, very hard. And Mary, thank you for staffing
a pleasure.
That work group. And I'll take your word on it, but it was a pleasure. She said it was a pleasure. And, we can debate that. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2951. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning. Chairman Deckard and committee members, with House Bill 2951, this is a bill that's dealing with the Dependent Care Assistance Income Tax Credit. So this is just a sunset extension to January 1st, 2027. Under current law, it's January 1st, 2007. So it goes out 20 years. Now, basically, with the Dependent Care Tax Credit, it was enacted in 1987, and its purpose is to encourage employers to provide child care assistance to their employees. The tax credit can be taken as a corporate excise or personal income tax credit, and it's equal to 50% of those total costs that the employer has spent for the dependent care assistance for its employees. The credit is limited to $2,500 per employee of the employer, and it can be carried forward for 5 years if there is insufficient tax liability. Under current law, what we've seen as far as the usage of the credit in 2002, there were 24 corporations that claimed a dependent care tax credit for a total credit amount of $2.3 million. In 2002, though, there still was a lot of corporations that didn't have a lot of tax liability. So what you saw was only 58% of the corporations who actually claimed the tax credit had a reduction in their tax liability. So there is some unused tax credits out there. In 2002, the amount of tax credit that was actually used was only $996,570, or 43% of the total tax credit that was claimed. And on average, that was roughly $71,184. So extending the sunset will have an additional revenue impact beginning in the 07-08 fiscal year of a reduction of approximately $2 million a year as you go out in future bienniums.
Elizabeth, did they talk, do you recall in the House, about why 20 years for the extension of the sunset?
Senator Deckard, no, we didn't have any discussion on the actual number, you know. And you'll notice this is A engrossed. Uh-huh. So I think the original bill just deleted it.
I remember right.
If I can follow up on that question. Since it had a sunset that expires this year, or in 07,
mm-hmm.
Do we have information as to how long that sunset was in place, how many years, the duration of the current sunset?
Senator Przanski, I don't recall exactly when was the last time we extended that sunset. I mean, it was enacted in 1987,
right.
So I'm sure it was, you know, we've extended it a couple times, but no, I don't have that information.
Okay.
So. I can get it if you want it.
I have one other question, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Regarding these type of tax credits that have sunsets, is there any rule of thumb as to the length of duration Is it just pretty much arbitrary based
on
case by case?
Yeah, Senator Prezansky, what I've seen anyway is, you know, sometimes it's 10 years, sometimes it's 20 years. It really depends on who's drafting it or who requested it.
So we'll look at, Senator Prezansky, we'll look at whether 20 years is the right duration on this one. Or
right.
We want to get a bit. Senator Starr?
Well, as opposed to removing the sunset altogether, I think 20 years is not an unusual long time. I think that it's certainly in our interest to encourage child care assistance. We passed a bill on the Senate floor yesterday that took the funding out of the workers' comp. Mm-hmm. Taxation. I think personally it's entirely appropriate to set it here. If future legislatures decide that there's a problem with that, they can deal with it. But I would be willing to move the bill as is today, as amended by the House, and get it on its way. As you know, we're down toward the end here, and I'd like to just see us go ahead and move the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Senator George, we do have testimony.
Oh, okay, because I was going to refer to the Oregon Commission for Child Care and the concept that they're the ones that are saying this program is working, let's extend it. I don't think the benefits to employer obviously are not going to cover any more than 50% of their cost, and the other question being is that if we don't do this, will we have a back away as far as those folks who might make provision for child care, and I sure think we need to be encouraging it, not discouraging it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
a believer in child care. A very big believer in child care. Ralph Groner, Julia Brim Edwards, Tina Kotek. You don't all have to come together if you don't want to, but you're more than welcome.
They're all friends.
Yeah.
It's a panel we haven't had this session. It's nice to get.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AFSCME, and my testimony will probably for once be the shortest, so that's why I'm going first. My background, so I have a bit of a conflict of interest here. I was the first president of the Oregon Daycare and Child Development Council of Oregon when I was a young legislator. This has always been an issue close to my heart from my days on war and poverty, working for daycare. So why is the union here? The fact of the matter, I wanted to look at the amount of companies, and Tina has a list of the types of companies who utilize this, but my only thoughts are quite simple. They're the same as they were 30 years ago. This benefits the family, it benefits the company, but it ultimately benefits the state in that it allows people to work and pay income taxes into the general fund. We're talking about high-quality daycare. I frankly think we really ought to do everything we can to grow this wonderful program. The cost of the general fund, to me, is minimal. You see me, well, you haven't, but the House does, fighting against tax credits quite regularly with Tim Nesbitt and Lori Wormer Whalen. This is not one that our union would fight against. This wasn't one that AFL-CIO would fight against, and this is not one that OEA would. This is one that at least our union would highly support. We have daycare now, but we also have other programs. We represent most Head Start in Oregon, and of course you may be aware we're working on daycare. So a conflict of interest is that of course this union cares, but I think that it's a wonderful program. It should continue, and quite frankly, if there's any way, at least in the future, I realize our economic hard times, but that we could expand this program, AFSCME would be wonderfully appreciative, and appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you, Ralph. Representative Flores, you want to come on up, and we'll work you in. Didn't see you arrive there. Tina, please.
Hello.
That is deference at its best. They were all going to depart. You're the sponsor of the bill, Representative Flores.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Linda Flores, State Representative for House District 51. And thank you to Ralph Groner and my colleagues here for their support, their testimony in support of this bill. And as Mr. Groner did indicate, this is a real benefit to not only low-income and middle-income employees, but certainly an incentive to employers. And it helps leverage the tax dollars and is a benefit to help child care become a viable commodity, I guess. And I guess I reflective in the 70s from my raging liberal days. We were talking about child care then and how employers can better help provide adequate child care for working families. And here we are 30-some years down the trail, and we're still talking about it. And this has been an effective tool. And I do not know if you had received any of the messages from daycare employers, owners, and they are telling us how helpful this particular tool is so that they can provide some sort of an incentive to their employees. Those employees can come, they can work, they can bring their children, and it helps make it more affordable for them. There's a lower turnover rate in their employment, and it's just a win-win situation. So very briefly, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would just urge your support for this yet critical need here in Oregon. And I would defer to my colleague here.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tina Kotek. I'm the policy director with Children First for Oregon. I'm also here today representing the One Voice for Child Care Coalition. You have a one-page sheet from the coalition. It's a statewide group of providers and advocates, business owners, folks who realize that child care is important for the state economically as well as for the development of all of our children in the state. One of our priorities for the coalition is passage of the extending the sunset for this tax credit. The original bill eliminated the sunset altogether. The amended version, as you know, extends it 20 years. We're very supportive of that. We'd like to see greater utilization of the credit. It's an incentive to employers. It's very much needed. Appreciate your comments earlier about the need to keep working on child care. It's part of the public-private partnership we're trying to do in the state to get businesses more involved. Just one piece of the toolbox there for the state, and we'd like to see the sunset extended. I also believe you have a memo from the Commission for Child Care that talks about the types of businesses who use the credit. As you see, small and mid-sized employers taking advantage of it. A lot of child care employers, as Representative Flores was noting. So it's a good bill. We'd like to see it more used, but let's certainly continue it. It's one of the things the state is doing well. Thank you.
Thank you. Joya.
Good morning, Chair Deckert, members of the committee. I'm Julia Brim Edwards. I work for Nike, and I'm the Deputy Director for State and Public Affairs. I'm also here today speaking to you as a parent of three children and also as a former commissioner on the Oregon Child Care Commission. I served for 3 years. I was appointed by House Speaker Bev Clarno and served in the consumer slot because those were my prime consumer years of child care. My kids are a bit older now. So I know firsthand the challenges that finding high-quality child care is for working parents, and that any assistance employers can provide to parents is really a valuable benefit to those families. As you probably all know, Nike is a homegrown Oregon business. We have about 6,100 employees in Washington County, and many of those employees are, like me, parents with fairly young children. We're here today to support the extension of the credit and the incentive it provides to Oregon businesses to assist their employees. Our child care center on campus, the Joe Paterno Center, has about 210 children there. It's the largest licensed child care facility in the state. If you visited Nike on a work day, I'm in the Dan Fouts building, which is right next to the Joe Paterno Center, and it's almost hard to get to the building. There's so many parents there dropping off their kids, and if you look at the center throughout the day, there's parents dropping by during the day to read to their kids, visit their kids. And it's, I think, as a parent, knowing that your child's in a good place during the workday, safe and having good care is increases your productivity as an employee, and certainly is very important as a parent to have that assurance. For Nike, although the paternal center is the largest center in the state, we currently have a wait list of several hundred employees who would like to have childcare through the paternal center, so we're actively evaluating a number of options, including building an additional childcare center on the campus. We believe extending the credit is good for our employees, and we think it's good for working families, so we encourage the committee to look at this favorably because it is something that would be very helpful to all parents who work. Thanks.
Thank you. That was Fade Away, the band that Julia's daughter played. Have they retained their name? They were thinking of changing their name.
Have they changed their name? Well, because they're in sixth grade, it's very likely it may change several more times.
I heard the band. So it's quite an incredible. They covered, I think, a Dandy Warhol song, which was and very, very talented. So, Julia, one of the questions we ask on tax credits is, would y'all be doing this without it? Would Nike be expanding and continuing with the existing program if we didn't extend the sunset on this program?
We certainly would be continuing to provide childcare. I think one of the factors for Nike, and I think it's different probably for every business, the impact the credit has. I think for us, it allows us to provide a higher quality, a lower staffing ratio. And one of the things I skipped over in my testimony is that our center has been granted the accreditation by the National Association of Education of Young Children. Only 7% of the early childhood programs nationwide earn that status, and all our staff are very experienced with experience in early childhood education. So it's a qualitative issue for us, but I'm sure for other employers it probably makes the difference between childcare and no childcare. So for us, it's more of a qualitative issue of what kind of quality you can offer and that we could subsidize as a company for our employees.
Yeah, Representative Flores.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add that the number of daycare provider owners that I have spoken with indicate that it would be very difficult for them enlisting employees, certainly, and employees that would be willing to stay if they did not have the benefit of being able to bring their children to work because of the credit that the daycare provider was able to take advantage of. So it would have an impact not on mega employers, but it will have a severe impact on smaller employers.
Mm-hmm. And the list that y'all provided actually was helpful to see. I mean, you have Nike, who's one of the larger employers in the state, but to see the diversity of folks utilizing the tax credit help answer that question also.
Yeah, and thank you, Chair Decker. Just to follow up, same thing. When the Oregon Child Care Resource and Referral Network, they have a business liaison who goes out and talks to businesses about the different types of credits out there, the different types of plans you can have to help your employers with their dependent issues. And they're dealing with a lot of issues on the margin, healthcare costs, child care costs. They want to do the right thing. I would guess a dentist office with six employees, if they didn't have this tax credit, they'd stop doing it. So I think this list, as you said, is really helpful to see the size of the employers actually taking advantage right now of the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Question, Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Knowing the program's been in existence for 18 years, and there's 26 companies that are listed from 2003, what is it that we can do better to get more people involved? And, I mean, to me, I'm surprised. The list is good, but it also surprises me that only 26 employers, and I assume if Nike's on the list, they're in the child care section, or are they not on this list?
I don't know. Where does Nike fit on that list?
Because, you know, knowing how many employees you have, there's no one that seems to be in there. So I'm wondering if this is a complete list of those that are maybe getting the access to this. And is there something that we could be doing to encourage more?
Chair Decker, Senator Brzezinski, excellent question. My understanding is this is a complete list from the 03 tax year. One of the reasons there's not a lot of take-up is larger businesses have a variety of other tax reduction opportunities, so they might not have the tax liability they need to take advantage of it, so they don't show up on the list. Nike might claim it, but if they didn't actually need it, or it's been deferred, they might not show up on the list. So I don't. We'd have to check with employment about that. What we could be doing better, really talking about it full in a really broad way, the legislature, the governor, everybody talking about the important role businesses can play. Certainly advocates continue to do work but need to do even more in terms of reaching out to businesses to let them know it's available. I think it's a combination of things. Clearly, it's difficult for employers to do this type of thing when they're dealing with larger other costs such as health care. But I think if public officials continue to you know, beat the drum of why this is important, that will help us get the message out. Thanks.
Comment on that. I think one of the things that can be done is just working with the business associations in the state. I think there's a lack of awareness of the credit. And certainly if you're an impacted employee, it's very, you're right in the crosshairs and you're very aware that this is a huge issue. But when you tend to move out of that age range where it's a very personal issue, it becomes less central. So I think part of getting the credit more utilized, because I think it's a very effective tool, is to work with the business association so businesses actually know it exists, and also partnering with employees who are of the age that this would be important, that they communicate with their employer that this would be a helpful benefit for them to have.
Elizabeth, does this have a carry forward in it so that it does? Yeah. So that an employer can carry it forward?
Right. Yeah, 5 years.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Senator George, like to spell? Well, thank you. And Representative Flores, thank you for bringing this. You, as Julia was saying, you usually would think it'd be young parents who would feel passionately about this issue. So it is nice to see you're the chief sponsor of a bill that would help a lot of young parents and parents in Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a young grandmother of mine.
I would agree, young grandmother. I would very much agree. Okay, so I would like to do a 10-year sunset or look at a 10-year sunset, and I'll talk to the sponsor of the bill about that. So we won't have a work session today, but if we can have that drafted, sure. And we'll bring the bill back. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2951, and we are adjourned till tomorrow.